Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. I'm John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Before we get to our interview, if you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Visit the Film Florida merchandise page at filmflorida.creator-spring.com to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and more. All merchandise proceeds go to the Film Florida Filmmaker Grant and Scholarship Fund. Florida resident Audrey Landers is an accomplished actor, singer, writer, director, composer, producer, and businesswoman. After majoring in psychology at Columbia University and Barnard College and studying music theory at Juilliard School of Music, she embarked on a legendary career in the entertainment industry, highlighted by her memorable role as Afton Cooper for 8 years in the iconic television series Dallas, along with countless other starring and guest roles in films and television series. Audrey wrote and recorded her first hit record at age 14, followed by a career as a multi-gold and platinum recording artist and songwriter, earning 10 gold singles, 4 gold albums, and 2 platinum albums. She also created Landers Star Collection with her mom, a women's clothing and accessory company offering affordable, glamorous fashion to women across the globe. She continues to act, produce, write, direct, and sing. We talk all of this and more on this episode of the Film Florida podcast. Here's my conversation with Audrey Landers. Welcome to the Film Florida podcast, Audrey.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
So let's start at the beginning of your career. How did you get your start in the industry?
Okay, well, you know, I think that some people, and that applies to me, are just born with the show business bug. And I always knew that's what I wanted to do. And I began as a child in all the school plays, and then I moved on to the local theater groups, and I had a creative talent, and I started writing poetry at like 11, and I got my first soap opera. Actually, I wrote my first song first, which got me the audition for the soap opera, which was called The Secret Storm. And in that soap opera for CBS, it was a fabulous experience, and I was able to, well, I'll tell you how it all began with the writing. Let me clarify that my music has always been intertwined with my acting career.
Right.
And so I was very fortunate to have gotten this soap opera, this daytime drama called The Secret Storm, and one day I received my script, which we usually got like 2 days or 3 days ahead of time. And the script said, Joanna sings and plays guitar. And I was about 13 at the time. And I said to my mom, I said, oh my God, it says I sing and play guitar. What do I do? She said, well, we better buy you a guitar tonight. I got a guitar. I had a book of poetry. I learned 3 chords, put one of them to music. And that was kind of the beginning of my songwriting career, which is still a huge part of my career and decades later, and went on from The Secret Storm to yet another soap opera. And in between, I did commercials and stuff in New York. And the second soap opera was called Somerset. And in Somerset, I also played a young aspiring teenage singer. And that was a very challenging and wonderful time in that I was on Somerset, which filmed in Brooklyn, New York at the NBC studios, and I was going to college in Manhattan, way uptown. It was as far as you could possibly get from Brooklyn. So I had a little bit of a commute in those days. I went to Columbia Barnard, and then I studied music at Juilliard.
Right.
And so I was kind of doing all of these different disciplines converging at once. And it was challenging and amazing. I would not recommend it to other people, but I was driven to do it. And yeah.
Well, talk about your time at Columbia and Juilliard. How did that prepare you for your music and television career as it continued?
Look, I think all education, whatever you study, prepares you for if you're inclined to be an actor, performer, writer. It all feeds into your psyche, your storytelling, your experiences. So, of course, in that way, it all affects it. However, on a more practical level, certainly the music was helpful. I was already writing songs. I had already had a little hit record in the U.S. In my earlier teens, a country song called "The Apple Don't Fall Far from the Tree," which actually made it to the top 20 in the country charts. So that's a whole different thing. But since I was already writing, the formal study really did help me in my music because I studied theory and composition. And as far as my studies, which were basically in psychology, oddly enough, that really did play in to more in more ways than I would have thought way back then. Obviously, as I said, education is so important and so beneficial. And I was studying psychology. And a decade later, when I wanted to write this my children's television series called The Hugabug Club, I really was able to tap into the things that I learned about the best, let's say, methods for teaching children, especially how music affects them and rhythm affects the learning process. And so I really did tap into that. I did a lot of research again on when I did create the characters of the Hugabug Club. I studied like which colors were most attractive to children and would be friendlier and more conducive to learning. And so our musical educational series, The Hugabug Club, which was a big hit in Florida, which I co-wrote the 47 half hours and the 250 original songs in it, was quite an incredible labor of love.
Now, we've already touched a little bit on your multifaceted career with acting and music and writing and producing. How do you know when a particular project is right for you?
Well, I think you have to keep an open mind, first of all. You have to be able to relate to the character in some way. I mean, even, you know, an evil character, you have to say, wow, I can really sink my teeth into this one. So I think that that is important, something that you feel that you would have fun performing in, because you never want to lose that aspect of it. You have to enjoy the characters, enjoy the project. And, you know, in this day and age, you want to know where it's going to be seen. So that makes a difference. And for me, I guess it sounds a little bit corny, but for me, life is too short to work with people you don't care for. So for me, working with people that I like to be around is, that's a real plus in choosing a project.
So I think that's a perfect segue to the next question, was that you and your sister, Judy, and your mom have worked together for years to develop projects. Is there a standout memory from working together, and what's it been like working with your family?
Well, I think for us and for me especially, it truly has been a blessing. My mom and I were partners in so many ventures, aside from the film and the TV. And my mom and I, Ruth Landers, we had a fashion collection together, which we traveled the world. We had our design studio in New York. We presented on Home Shopping Europe and QVC UK. And it was quite an adventure. And all my records, I had a lot of hit records over the decades. And she always went on tour with me. So we were really, really, partners in so many ways. My sister was part of it for certainly some of the films and the TV series, etc. And in those days, we had a really great time working together. We really felt like we were a very cohesive team in those days.
Yeah. And now you're continuing that with your son. You're currently developing projects together, including a dark pop musical, which piqued my interest. How do the newer, more experimental projects reflect how you're, you know, looking at creativity today?
Well, I think, you know, there are so many venues, outlets that you can present your project. And it's kind of a double-edged sword because there's so much content being produced. And I think everybody is out there and everyone seems to believe they can be a creator. Those that make decisions have a lot of stuff to sift through to find the cream of the crop, so to speak. And as a creator, I love to do so many different kinds of projects, whether they're comedies or dramas or, and as a writer, I write quite a few things with Daniel, who is my creative partner. We have an amazing relationship and he's brilliant. And so I'm really lucky to have such a brilliant collaborator. And we have a sci-fi project that we've written. We have an irreverent crime comedy series. And of course, the dark pop musical film that you mentioned, which Daniel has written all the music for, and I wrote the screenplay for, and it's very exciting. And we're in the process of getting our funding, and we have a wonderful team attached already. We have a producer, his name is Simon Egan, and he was among his many, many accolades and credits and awards. But he's most well known to us for The King's Speech. He produced The King's Speech, that film. But he's very much into music and musical projects. And our dark pop film, we're also developing for the stage. So it's great to take advantage of all the possibilities out there.
Well, and now you have appeared both from an acting standpoint and as well as some other things. You've been involved in a lot of different types of projects. How do you approach shifting kind of the mindset and the creativity between genres, either as an actor or writer, producer? Like, not many people can do that.
It's a really interesting question because I've never actually put it to words. I think all my life I've had to compartmentalize my life into the educational part. Okay, so I was studying and then I was on camera and then I was writing. And I think I was able to separate each part of my creativity and my brain power when it was needed for acting and music. And I think it's mainly just putting yourself in the role, immersing yourself in that moment, in that character, in that song, in that situation to create the song. That's really what it is, just completely being a part of it, immersed in that moment.
Well, on the acting side, earlier in your career, you played Ashton Kutcher on the beloved television series Dallas. You were in this role for 8 years. I think I actually probably saw every single episode because my parents were huge Dallas fans. Your character was originally, though, only written for 2 episodes. What was it like to then be offered a continuing character on the show?
It was so wonderful to have been offered the first 2 episodes. So then to have been offered a recurring character was beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I always dreamed big, but that was a big show. And I was so thrilled and excited and nervous to have been invited to be a part of it for those 2 episodes. And the first 2 episodes, Afton was supposed to come in, stir up a lot of trouble with her little slutty self, and then move on. And the first day of filming, actually, it was lunch break, and I was very nervous. It was an established cast and set, and I just needed to get my, compose myself. So I went into the empty sound stage. Nobody was there. It was all shut down, and I found myself a piano just tucked away in the corner somewhere, a random piano. And my music always sort of took me away. And so I was able to start fiddling around. And I said, okay, I'm just going to think about this song that I'm writing right now. And I was working on that very quietly. And all of a sudden, Leonard Katzman, the producer-director, walked in carrying his lunch. And he heard me. And I was, a little bit shocked. And he said, oh, no, go continue. And he said, what is that? I said, oh, it's just nothing. It's just something I'm writing. And that was the whole conversation. Sure enough, I get a call from my agent that they want to continue writing me in and as an aspiring singer. And so here we go, third soap opera. The big soap, Dallas, has now written me in as, again, an aspiring singer. And as Afton, I got to sing all of the songs that Audrey wrote.
Yeah.
So I wrote specifically for my character.
Yeah. Now, Dallas, it was an iconic show in the 1980s. Looking back, I mean, did you realize like how big the show was? Was there ever like a pinch me moment where you were like, holy cow, I can't believe I'm actually part of this series?
There definitely was that sensation. I, as an actor, kind of focused just on the craft. So I didn't really focus on the enormity of the show itself. However, it really, really made an impact on my life and my career because of the music. Because a producer, a very well-known producer in Europe, who was producing in Europe and in the US, had heard me sing on the show, approached my mom, who was managing me, and said, well, does she really sing? And she said, yeah, come on over. We're having a dress rehearsal for her Vegas act. And so, if you're in LA, where we were having the rehearsal, come on by. And of course he did. And I was singing live, obviously. And he signed me to a record deal. And that thus began a string of many hits for the next decade. All over Europe, the hits were. We didn't release in the U.S. It was a very different, feeling in those days about writers, about actors who were singers. The lines didn't cross in those days. Now it's a completely different thing. But so what happened was then I really felt the enormity of Dallas, because when I was on tour all over the world, Dallas was so popular. And during the time I was on the show, it was like the number one show in 110 countries. Mm-hmm. Then you start feeling, whoa. And my career was very different in Europe, in that my songs were big hits. Dallas was a big hit. And literally, I would go to a city wherever my concert was for that weekend, because I was still filming Dallas. That was another hectic time. I mean, people would literally camp out in front of the hotel, waiting for me to leave the next morning to go to the rehearsals and, radio shows and all of the promotion that I had to do for my records. So that's when I really felt it.
Probably didn't get much sleep those days, huh?
No, I did not. No sleep. My mom and I would leave filming it. They were pretty helpful in many ways when I knew my schedule ahead of time. So I could leave on a Thursday night from LA, and then I'd have 3 days in Frankfurt or Paris, or those were the starting points. And I'd do concerts and TV shows nonstop around the clock and then fly back to the States by Monday morning. So yeah, there was not a lot of sleep. And I have to tell you, my mom was so energetic, I probably couldn't keep up with her.
That's great. Now, before and after Dallas, you've had numerous high-profile film and television, appearances. But Dallas was your biggest engagement, with that project. So talk about the difference of being on a series for close to 100 episodes over 8 seasons versus kind of the one-off and two-off things that you pop into on a more regular basis.
Well, certainly having the opportunity to do a series that's so long, running, and you get to develop the character and your fan base gets to know your character and you feel very close to the fans and they feel a closeness to you too, because they really do feel like they know you after all that time. And it's, you know, it's very funny. Like today's, the shows that I watch or that we all binge, you go, oh my goodness, it's eight episodes of my favorite show. And when we would do is like back in those days, the typical season, half a season was 13, a full season was 26 episodes. Dallas, because of its popularity, so often would get picked up for 34, 36 episodes. So we would film 36 episodes in one season.
Yeah.
It's a very different idea than
it was too popular to show reruns. You couldn't afford to not have a new episode.
Yeah. And then we did have reruns too. Yeah. And, you know, it was just really, it was an exciting time. The fans demanded it and the networks were willing to answer them.
Yeah. Now, we talked a little bit about the Hug Bug Club and performing your own songs on Dallas. And you talked a little bit about the music side of thing kind of driving the acting. But from a storytelling standpoint, you know, how has your music evolved as a storytelling tool when you're, you know, bringing it into the acting side?
Well, like, as I mentioned, I wrote my songs for Afton to fit into the storylines, you know, her affair with JR and feeling, you know, losing at love and really having feelings for him, which who understood that one? But, you know, so I would write specifically for that. And then when I was doing my recording for Europe, I also was again given somewhat of a template because my songs were sung in and written. I wrote them in English, and yet they were hits in many different countries that were not first language English speakers, like Germany, France, Switzerland, Netherlands, Hungary. I mean, they were hits in those countries. So my songs had to be tailored to be phonetically acceptable so that foreigners could sing along with the hooks very easily. And so my producer and the record company would give me a kooky title and I would go, oh my goodness, how am I going to write a song about that? And, you know, and so it took some creativity to have a hit called Manuel Goodbye, which was supposed to be about a man saying goodbye to his son on a fishing trip. And I said, that's where I draw the line. I'm going to have to sing it. I'm going to write it into a love song. And it was a monster hit, my first hit. But then I got funny titles like Honeymoon in Trinidad or Playa Blanca, which is a very romantic title. And so my songs really did appeal. They were like romantic pop songs.
Okay.
With a very European beat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, talk a little bit about the difference from an artist and a creative standpoint of performing on set, that's to tape without an audience, versus a live venue where you are performing to the audience, not a camera.
Okay, I know I'm supposed to say that I just love the live audience. I know, and I do, but that's not my mainstay, although I am doing a fun project, which I'll tell you about in a little bit, with my son in New York, off Broadway. But I do love that, but I also really enjoy film. I really do. I enjoy film because you have the opportunity to be more, well, the acting style is more intimate. And I think for me, the opportunity to try different things. I mean, you don't often have the luxury of doing, you know, multiple takes in different styles, but occasionally you get that. And it's very, it's really creative and fulfilling to do that. Now on stage, you have a very different dynamic because you do a show, a live show, which I've done many of, and you're interacting with the audience at that moment. And you really do feel a certain electricity that you don't get on film. They're both very, very exciting to work in, both mediums.
Excellent. Now, you've also appeared in a couple episodes of Burn Notice, which is arguably the most popular Florida-based television series in the last 25 years. Talk about your time on that series.
Oh, I loved it. I wish I had done more episodes. I had just finished doing, what movie was it? Another movie that was filming in Florida. I can't remember which film it was, a feature. And it was some of the same production and casting. And they said, you know, we wrote this whole series. It's called Burn Notice. It's going to be filming soon. Maybe we can get you in on it because we liked working together. And they wrote me in for a few episodes and it was really a lot of fun. And it was so nice to film in Florida. It was really a joy.
Well, talk a little bit about that. You've lived in Florida for a number of years and you've worked on a handful of projects here in the state. From a production standpoint, what stands out to you that's different about filming in Florida versus other locations?
Okay, well, those two projects, I did one project when we first came to Florida called Circus Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's a funny little story. Because when I left Beverly Hills, I had two little boys, and I said, you know, I'm ready for a change in my life. I'm going to move after. It was quite impulsive, fell in love with Florida after we came here for the performance of the Hugabug Club, a live performance. We fell in love with Sarasota, actually, which is where I'm at. And ultimately, we moved here. And I thought to myself, this is a new chapter of my life. I've been working since I'm a child. I'm going to retire and be a mom and do all the great mom things. Well, I did do those things, seriously. And I was great mom, soccer mom, all that stuff. I was very involved in all their school stuff, but I did not retire. When we got here, I said, wow, this is beautiful. Look at this location. Look at that. Anyway, so we wrote a film called Circus Island and produced that when we first were here in Sarasota. And at that time, there was not a lot of production going on in our area, especially. And so it was difficult to get a crew, to get locations. All that stuff was a little bit more challenging than we had found it to be when we lived in LA and we produced independent features, my mom and I. But then, jump forward, here we are now, I'm doing Burn Notice, and it's a fantastic production and a fantastic crew. And I think we just were a couple of years too early with our own independent production, because now I think the state is blossoming. So many productions come in here, and I hope we get to get the benefit of some more incentives to bring more production to the state, because we have a lot to offer. We have so much to offer in the way of scenery. We're not just beaches and, you know, we've got swamps. We have hiking trails. And we really have, and some beautiful cities for sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. What advice would you give to, well, I'm going to ask you two different questions. What advice would you give aspiring actors, you know, coming up today? But also, what about aspiring just creatives? Because, like, you're not just an actor. You're an all-around creative. So look at it from both perspectives. What would your advice be?
Okay. It was probably the advice that I was given as a child and the advice that I gave to my son, who is a creative multi-hyphenate actor, singer, writer, composer, comedian, I mean, you name it, okay? Influencer. He was told, and he could say it much better than I can, that you can't rock and roll unless you honor roll, okay? So you have to you cannot let your education slip by. You need the education for so many reasons to be a well-rounded person, to be an intelligent and informed person. And all these things are necessary to support your creative dreams, because it's not an easy path to be a creative, whether it's a writer, director, or actor. There's a lot of competition, and you have to stay grounded And I think that is the most important thing. You have to stay grounded.
There you go. That's great. Where can people find more about you? Plug away here. Tell us everywhere we should go find more about Audrey and family.
Okay. So I keep mentioning that Daniel and I are working on projects together, and his Instagram is, and my Instagram are both full of very silly, funny things that have led to, well, first of all, he's Daniel Landers Instagram, and mine is Audrey Landers Official. But because we had such a goofy and fun Instagram, a venue in New York has asked us to put on a show called Mommy Issues. They say, would you do something for Mother's Day? And so it's called, we wrote it, and it's called Mommy Issues because cabaret is cheaper than therapy. We are very much ensconced in the rehearsals right now and putting together the show. And we love performing together. It's the cabaret act, and it's at the Laurie Beachman Theater, and it's on May 10th. I know you didn't want me to specify the date, but there is a date here.
Yep.
And the fun thing about, if you're not going to be in New York, they do offer a live streaming option. So a lot of my friends in Florida who cannot come to New York are live streaming it. They're having live streaming parties, and it'll be a blast. It's really a lot of fun. So that's coming up, obviously. And our musical film. And we have an irreverent crime comedy series, which we also have some wonderful people attached to, like Kenny Ortega and his company and Paul Becker. We have a sci-fi project, a series that we've written. So look, we're all over the place, but that's kind of like how my brain works. Mm-hmm. I love all sorts of genres. I love watching sci-fi. And crazy enough, I love music. Musicals, not necessarily show tunes, because like our pop musical is definitely not show tunes. It's contemporary, haunting, beautiful music. And it's inspired by a chance meeting that Daniel had with Amy Winehouse shortly before she died.
Wow.
Our film is inspired by that meeting and fueled by the myth of the 27 Club, which is a pop culture myth that exists today. So it's a haunting and important film in that it teaches you that you are in control of your destiny. Free will is a thing, and you can control your destiny.
That's great. That's a great way to wrap things up. So this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and share your stories and your insight and learn more about your terrific career. We appreciate you being on the Film Florida podcast.
Well, thanks. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to the Film Florida podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org and like or follow our social media pages. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at filmflorida.creator-spring.com. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.